I wanted to kill that fucker. I wanted to fucking kill him.
Faded. Cut two.
Exterior. Interior.
Restaurant.
Bar. Club.
Day.
Night.
Action.
What's going on, everyone? Happy Lunar New Year. Happy Year of the Dragon. If you were born in the Year of the Dragon, good for you. Happy New Year. But we are biased towards all the oxes out there. All right, enough of that. What are you watching? This is Restaurant Fiction, the show that reviews fictional restaurants, bars, and clubs in TV and film. My name is Manas Rose, and today we are talking about one of the most important fictional music clubs in all of TV, and that is none other than the fictionalized version of the Bluebird. The Bluebird Cafe featured in the hit show Nashville. Why is this one of the most important? It's because the fictionalized version actually helped in popularity, or helped make the real Bluebird so popular that pretty much, yeah, you can't really get in. It is like the Rayos of music clubs out there. And I'm talking about the Rayos, not the LA Rayos. No disrespect to the LA Rayos. I'm talking about the Harlem Rayos. Yeah, unless you're like a New York politician or Martin Scorsese, that's like the only way you can get in. That's kind of like with the Bluebird. I don't know what country singer or politician you need. Anyway, I digress. So, who is actually talking about the Bluebird on Restaurant Fiction? Who did we bring? We were actually in Austin for the Austin Film Festival. We got to talk with one of our favorite screenwriters. Her name is Wendy Calhoun. We revere her work. We started watching and reading and studying her work from the hit show Justified, especially season 2, and we talk about that. But she has written on a slew of other amazing and very, very popular shows, including Revenge, including Empire. But of course, on Restaurant Fiction, we are talking about none other than a show that she was a part of, that she wrote the fictionalized Bluebird in, and that is Nashville. Here is our little chit-chat, our fireside chat with the amazing Wendy Calhoun. Wendy, listeners and watchers of Restaurant Fiction, lend me your ears, because we are going to paint you a picture of Music City. Actually, we're going to get a little more specific. We're going to paint a picture of the music, or a music club in Nashville. No, we're not talking about the honky-tonks. No, we're not talking about everything that happens along Broadway. No, we're not talking about the bluegrass. No, we're not talking about the big, huge Ryman, or the big, huge football stadium where the Titans play that holds gigantic music festivals. We are talking about the core. We are talking about the pulse. We are talking about the heart of what makes the city sing. And that is none other than a boutique, bespoke, intimate music club called the Bluebird. All right, now, if all of those other music venues and music places were the muscle, were the fascia, were the skin, the exoskeleton of Music City, well, the Bluebird is what keeps this whole city alive. You see, the Bluebird is the soul. You walk in and you walk in past all of the Christmas lights, and you give your hand something to do by ordering a drink, by ordering some bar food, and you relive history, you become a part of history, or you just breathe in the vibe. And it does not matter if you are up on the stage or if you are just a patron tapping your foot. Now, this music, what are we talking about? We're not just talking about a song for pop and entertainment value. This music moves the story forward. You see, the Bluebird has power. It doesn't just have power for the audience member. It actually has power for the person on stage, or the people that are on stage. It actually has the power to make foes friends and for them to harmonize together. It has the power to connect people to fall in love, maybe even to fall out of love, to see into the future and to make sure that that certainty is acceptable and the person up on stage is ready to risk it all and to see the abundance that happens to him or her. Now, I know it is cliche, but the bluebird is where legends are made. And even if you want to be that person, if you are striving to be that person, or even if you are a patron, you are around that energy, that charisma, to make sure that you will always be at the right place at the right time. All right, so that was our little quick review of the fictionalized version of the Bluebird Cafe from the hit series Nashville. We are talking to one of the great writers of Nashville, Wendy Calhoun. What does the Bluebird, speaking, say about the characters? Also, how do you even make the Bluebird a character of itself? Yeah.
How do you do it? I mean, the Bluebird, it was like a, for us writing the series, I think we just felt like it was a really strong, the word I guess I can come up with right now is nexus. It is a place where you could have people crossing in and out of each other's lives, having moments that turn for them, a gathering place. And like I said, the intimacy is what was really important, because a lot of what we were trying to do when we would have scenes in the Bluebird was get into some like more intimate emotional moments that weren't going to be in their homes, you know, or, you know, other spaces, but just a music intimacy space. I don't know how else to put it.
But that's actually really cool. Like, in a way, this fictitious club is more intimate than their home.
Yeah. I mean, there's something totally different seeing Raina James get up and sing next to Deacon in the Bluebird. I mean, it's almost like they're making love in front of you, quite frankly. Seriously.
It was. I'm not going to lie. It was. Absolutely. Absolutely. And even in your episode, there was some sexy stuff in it. I'm not going to lie. You had stuff for my wife, but you also had stuff for me too. I'm just saying.
And you together, that's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't write this question, but I mean, were you also experiencing the great food of Nashville as well? Like, did you have a meet and three from Arnold's? Did you go to Sean Brock, had a big presence during your time? Did you go to any Sean Brock restaurants? Did you?
Well, what is the Sean Brock restaurant name?
Oh, let's see, Husk. Did you go to Husk? No.
Did I go to Husk? I don't know. Okay, my go-tos, I used to go to Hattie B's, because that was right near the hotel mm-hmm. where I was staying.
More than Prince, because it was Hattie B's versus, right?
Well, right. Okay, well, yeah. I liked Prince Hot too. As a matter of fact, I liked it so much that I treated the whole crew to Prince one day after we were wrapping a shoot on one of my episodes. So yeah, had that. Loveless Cafe is someplace that we went as writers. I think one of our first dinners was at Ralph and Daughters. Do you know Ralph and Daughters?
Uh-uh.
So that was one. So those were some of the spots. But we, you know, I could have fun just going to, there's like a farmer's market area, if I remember right. I could have fun just going there or just, I don't know. I had fun in Nashville just discovering food. Just, you know, it wasn't like I was, I didn't have an eater list, you know what I mean, right. That I followed. I just would just go out and see what was good or ask people that were on our crew, because most of our crew actually were from Nashville, lived in Nashville. Where do y'all go, you know? And it was very, I have to say, that particular show was very social. You know, we would go out for drinks after shooting with the cast, with the crew, with, you know, we would just hang out and do stuff like that. So we were always trying to like find new restaurants and where we could go hang.
Well, that just adds to an amazing vibe on a set. Like, I mean, that just adds to an incredible experience.
Yeah, it was very much like that. But the joking thing, though, there's a guy named Steve Buchanan who used to be head of the Gaylord, which was part of the Opry. And he had this phrase that he told us on the very first trip. He said, in Nashville, you're either going to a party or you're leaving a party. And so we took that to heart. We really did that. We were like, okay, work's done. We're going to a party.
All right, we're going to do a little crossover episode here. So you also wrote for Empire, okay?
Right.
All right, so, and the fictional club in Empire was Leviticus?
Yes.
Right, so, all right, fan fiction crossover episode. How would Leviticus do in Nashville?
Oh, wow. So Leviticus, I think, would be an interesting place in Nashville because it would be kind of like an alt scene. Like, because, you know, it's so country and so gospel and rhythm and blues there. And you got some Memphis blues right there, but they don't really have like that mecca for hip hop. So this, you know, if I was writing the scene for Leviticus, it would be where Lil Nas X would come out and do this. I'm not kidding. And Billy Ray would get up there with him. You know what I mean? I would like, you know, tap into that. And I think it would be actually a lot of fun. But I think a place like that could do very, very well. I remember going by there one night when Snoop was playing on that stage and there were people lined up the street, lined up on that bridge. They bring out their little, like, you know, what, your camping chair and your beers and your cooler, and they just sit on the bridge and watch a free show. That's Nashville. But they loved Snoop Dogg just as much as they love, you know, Billy Ray. So that's the kind of place where I think they would actually really embrace a Leviticus. I think a Leviticus could do well, actually.
I love it. And vice versa. How would the Bluebird Cafe do in New York City?
Oh, now that's an interesting one. Well, it's the right size. Because it's small, you know, but, you know, it's funny. I grew up in Dallas, Texas, and I went to New York University. And so in New York was the first place I lived outside of Dallas. And I would get real homesick. Like, and I think a place like the Bluebird Cafe for all the Southern transplants that are up in Manhattan would actually do quite well because it would give you a little taste of home. So I guess that's my long way of saying I think Leviticus could do well in Nashville, and I think that the Bluebird could do well in Manhattan. I do.
All right, so moving on, like, though, because, you know, before we started, you said, you know, you're writing your own stuff. Now, when it comes to writing your own stuff, or even when it comes to writing one of these shows like Nashville, like Justified, like The Rookie, et cetera, et cetera. How often are you asking yourself, what do my characters eat and drink?
All the time. All the time. I mean, you can see that. So I wrote on The Rookie Feds, and I wrote the second episode, several episodes of the first season run. And I mean, I think it's in like maybe the second scene of the episode. I've got Simone Clark, which was played by Niecy Nash-Betts. I had her father, Cuddy, come to her with a special, you know, candied bacon that he made for her that morning. And so food for me in that particular instance is a love language. So I do that all the time where I'm, you know, I decide what kind of food would this character make if they make it or buy or take someone to. It's a love language. Like, how do they give it to someone else? I'm always thinking about that. You know, it's a choice whether they eat or not. I mean, Malcolm Bright is a character I wrote on Prodigal Son. So Malcolm was, he was anxious and neurotic. He actually didn't like to eat, but we made kind of, we joked about it because we would have him just have candy. He would only have candy. That was his thing. But these are like character choices. And you could say so much with so little just by showing what the character's consuming. I can't think of a single script that I've written that didn't have some sort of food something. Like, I'm not kidding.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, like, even, and it's I love that because in your first, or when, in your episode of Justified, or when we, the ones that, well, I mean, we're a fan of all of Justified, but in particular, you start off a scene with, I believe, Raylan brings a pie to Mags, I believe, like, that's his to figure out, that's his, like, break, let's break bread with this mob boss in a way, this Dixie mob boss, you know. I mean, you know, but there, that's even a food element as well.
Yeah, and listen, I did research in Harlan, and one of the things that people like to do is bring each other their special moonshine or their special pie or their special anything. Like, that's just, that's kind of the grace that a lot of people do in that small town. So that's us, you know, trying to capture the essence of what Harlan is. And Harland is a place where people share. I remember great stories. I remember there was one, I got to know a state trooper very well and his wife when I was doing a lot of research on Justified. And she, I think there was one time she told me she was snowed in or something, or it was really bad weather and she couldn't go out. So she decided to have a fry party. She just decided to take everything out of her fridge and fry it. And that is like quintessential Harlan, Kentucky. And it's such a great character thing. And I've yet to write the fry party into something, but wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, Wendy, you need to do this. This is, I mean, yeah, just, you know, even if it's a throw, even if you know that the studio network's going to give you a note to be like, gotta, like, love it, Wendy. We're already buying it. Gotta take this out. You still gotta put at least someone.
I know. She and I had a whole conversation because I was fascinated. I was like, so did you fry the olives? Because that sounds kind of good. Yeah, I fried the olives. I fried the pickles. I fried the eggs. I fried the, she fried everything.
Damn. And actually, though, a fried olive in a good, like, gin martini is actually really good. I'm just
delicious,
saying.
Delicious, right?
I'm just saying.
Right?
Like,
stuff with a little blue
thing.
Cheese.
Yeah.
I know you feel me.
I'm just saying.
I know.
Well, what's the Wendy's special braised short rib recipe?
I mean, I know the basics, but, you know, basically I'm taking a really nice, you know, cut of short rib, right? Mm-hmm. And I brown it, you know, I will do a little seasoning, maybe a little flour, maybe a little salt and pepper, and I'll brown it up so it got some nice crisp on the outside. And then I just create a really nice roux, you know, so it's the basics. It's your mirepoix, right? You've got your carrots, your onion and your pepper, and then spices. And I would usually put some tomato sauce. Now I am telling you the recipe. I usually put some tomato sauce in it. See, I really do cook. And then just, it's the matter of braising it for quite some time. I do that a lot. I like to, like, chilies I make, mac and cheese, greens, you know, I tend to make
comfort food.
Yeah. I make comfort food. Yeah.
I'm the head of a studio or network, right? And I'm throwing you oodles of money. It doesn't matter. Oodles of money and carte blanche. And I'm saying, Wendy, we want a show based on your dream fictional restaurant, okay? It's automatically going to be greenlit, you know, not going to be problems, not going to be network notes. What does your dream fictional restaurant look like? Original.
All right, so you know I did Hell's Kitchen, right?
Right.
So my dream restaurant was to have a place, and it's fictional, no problem, but I would have it, it would be like the cook-off, right? So it would be a space where like three different chefs would work there, right? And they would have a tasting menu, and you would all, they'd kind of be in competition with each other. You kind of get to choose like which dish like really hit you, you know? So that's one of the ideas that I really like. And then I had two, two pitches.
Please.
Another one, I'm obsessed with this idea right now. I'm obsessed with the idea of going back and tasting your childhood favorites. Right. I recently had an ice cream sundae that I shared with a good girlfriend of mine, and it took us back to when we were like 5 years old. But taking people back to something in their childhood to me is like, I love that notion, you know. So like my daughter, I have a daughter who's about to turn a very old age, and but we're going to a restaurant called Barton G that's here in LA, and they have one in Miami too, but they have a cotton candy dessert. I just love that. I just think that's amazing. I love any kind of anything that's going to take people back. So that's what my thing. So maybe it's a bit of a time travel show if you think about it. You eat a certain dish and you go right back in time to some place.
I love that. I mean, yeah, look at even Ratatouille, the whole dish, you know, with the food critic at the end, just goes there.
Yes. Yes. That's the power, I think, of food. That's the power.
Now, obviously, we have not seen these restaurants yet in TV and film, but yeah, when you're watching or when you're creating, what would you like to see more of when it comes to like restaurants or clubs or, bars when it comes to TV and film?
I want to see more down-home stuff. I'm kind of over high-end. And maybe that's just me and my personal life. That sounds so like bougie. I'm really over high-end. I want to like, you know, but I am. I like, when I say down-home, like for example, there's a restaurant that just popped up here that is a backyard restaurant. Like, I love that idea. Somebody that just opens up their backyard and is making you the best freaking seafood tacos you've ever had in your life. There's one down in Inglewood. Yeah.
I think I've seen it on my Instagram.
Okay. I think that's hot. So, and I think also LA has incredible, incredible street food. Like, you see it everywhere you go. There's street food, you know, and there's whole pockets like on Vermont, not far from me off of Pico. There's a whole giant sort of like parking lot of street food. I want to see more of that kind of interaction because I feel like there's a ton of story there that's not getting told. So that excites me. I miss, you know, I used to rave, okay? I love to rave. And back in the day, I miss the underground clubs. You talked about clubs, but like the club where you had to like drive out to a place and they gave you a map. And then you went deep into the desert and everybody danced until dawn. I miss that. I want to see that kind of stuff on TV. I want to see underground. I want to see something a little more gritty. I want to see something that's just like very direct in terms of somebody made this. She made these tamales and she out here on the street and she's selling them to you, you know, and that conversation that happens right there. So that's what I'm missing in TV when it comes to food. And clubs and that kind of thing. The down home, the off.
I want to say this. Track. Wendy, you were like, you know, we introduced you as a baddest. You were already cool and awesome before even walking into the restaurant fixture, but now you just gave us this, that you're this rave machine. Now you've just elevated yourself. Now you just elevated yourself to another level. I was saying.
Yeah, that's the, yeah, you know, people laugh at me, but like, I'm the kind of person that when I go to Vegas, you know, I love to stay at the Cosmopolitan, you know, because I love that they have secret pizza. You know, they got that little corridor in the back. There's this little pizza joint mm-hmm. and people line up and, you know, I've been in that line at 2 a.m, you know, and that's where all the stories are. That's where everything's happening.
I love it. All right. So... here we go. Yeah, this is a deeper question. So, yeah, what failure of yours has actually turned out to be one of your ultimate successes?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I've been thinking a lot about failure, and I think I'm lining up with what Thomas Edison said. It's like, it wasn't that he failed 1,000 times to invent the light bulb. He just... you know, he just found 1,000 ways to get it wrong. And that's how I'm kind of feeling about failure. But I guess most recently I'd have to say I had developed a series for NBC and I'd written a pilot and it was about the first ever mother-daughter FBI agents. They happened to be black women and it was a true story. And I thought I did a great job on that pilot, but they didn't end up picking it up. And I was really sad because I had spent a lot of time doing research on, you know, particularly black women in the FBI. But when it came time, when Rookie Feds reached out to me, I was like, I will be there, you know, because I already had all that, had done all that work and I had spent all that time thinking about that type of character. And also I had made many friends that are black FBI agents. And so it was great because I was able to take all that research and now I could put it into this new series. And I even brought on the tech advisor who was a retired black female FBI agent. And I think that was very helpful for Niecy to know that she had somebody there who could really talk to the full experience. You know, yeah, that was something that at the time was painful. And I thought, well, what did I do all that work for? But then, you know, several years later, I feel like the world caught up to maybe where my head was.
I love that. All right. Got time for 2 more questions?
I have plenty of time. We can talk all day.
All right. Well, fine. Then 3 more questions. 3 more questions.
Okay.
All right. 4. Back to then, because this is actually, shouldn't do this, but I'm a fanboy here. I'm a fanboy of Mags Bennett of FX. Even Turan, when he came, was like, I love Mags Bennett. And for people who don't know, be one of the best TV villains, I feel, of all time. So anyway, Mags Bennett is the villain of season 2 of Justified. Okay. what's your preference? And this is not just Justified. This is any show of yours, original or you know, or an existing IP. But what's your, what would you rather write, the hero or the villain?
The villain, always, always. The best shows have the best villains. Your hero is only as strong as your villain, you know, and the villain should feel like it's their show. And that's how I like to approach a villain. And when I'm cooking on the villain, I know I'm cooking. I'm serious. Like, that's how I know. So, like, Mags was awesome. Because after the season of us working on that character, and I'm very proud of that. I went to Kentucky by myself. That's where I first heard the stories about a real-life woman. And that's where I got the idea of taking one of Elmore Leonard's stories and switching the gender and creating this character of Mags. It was a mashup of a lot of different things. But in the doing of that, it took my whole career in a new direction, because up until that point, I had never really written, you know, a really great female villain. But after that, it was like when Revenge came along, I was like, yeah, I can go do Revenge. I'd love to. Victoria Grayson, I'll write that all day for Madeline Stowe. Like, it made so much sense, you know? And then, you know, after that, I just started to really think about it opened up this lane for me in terms of, like, really finding that great antagonist. Because you would be surprised how many people come to me with ideas. This happens all the time, literally all the time. People come with me with a script or a pitch or an idea, and I will say, who's the antagonist? And they can't answer the question. I'm like, well, what's your story? You know what I mean? Like, people don't think about that. And I think about it all the time. Because, you know, a good villain makes a great story. Lately, let's see, I watched Bad Sisters. I don't know if you've seen that. That's on Apple.
Yeah, I've seen that.
So, yeah. JP, ooh, that was a good one. He was a good villain.
I wanted to kill that fucker. I wanted to fucking kill him. I wanted to, like, hurt
just
him.
Just like the sisters.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And that's kind of what I think, that's when you're really doing something great. And I would attain to try to create something like that, where you are with the hero, whether the hero is going to have to do something bad, like kill him or whatever. You are rooting for that hero because you can't stand that other one so much, that antagonist. You know, it should be something you'd love to hate.
If you had to receive professional advice, either from your 18-year-old self or your 90-year-old self, and remember, now, the rule is your 90-year-old self is lucid, memory is great, like, you're sharp. Like, who would you rather receive advice from?
Definitely my 90-year-old self, for sure.
What would she say to you?
Relax. You got this. Just relax. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Life is long, girl. Quit worrying about stuff that you have no control over. You know? I think she would tell me to chill out. I listen to her. I know her. My grandma is still alive, by the way. I think she'd be 104 this year. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I've often asked her. I love her to pieces. And I'm like, what's the secret? And she says, it's just being happy.
I love that. All right. So, you know, you're from Dallas. Our last guest, Chad Feehan, who he wrote Lawman Bass Reeves, and he said, you know, and he's from, I believe, he's from Dallas as well. He's from Fort, yeah. So, but he said Texas, you know, is so rich with stories. Like, it's not just cowboys. You know, you have, like, Halt and Catch Fire. You know, that's a Dallas pretty much story right there. You have Friday Night Lights. You have, like, there's so, in Texas in general, is just rich with stories. Like, what story is, like, what's, like, your Texas story? Like, what are those, like, rich stories?
There's a story I've been dying to tell for a few years. I've sold it a couple of times, but it's in turnaround right now. But I want to tell the story about Black women going through cotillions. I want to tell the story of what middle-class Black America looks like, but in a real way. You know what I mean? Like, I think that one of the things that's really interesting about Dallas in particular, and I'm going to just be real clear, Black Dallas in particular, is that I don't feel like we really see the images of us on screen. Those of us who come from, you know, families that are together, families that, you know, own their home, families that send their kids to college, families that, you know, that are still very strong and rooted. And there's a lot of that in Dallas. And so the Cotillion was one way for me to access a lot of those families and tell their stories. But I just feel like there's this beautiful middle-class Black American life that is vibrant in Dallas that has not been shown. And I feel like the world needs to see. So there's that.
Wendy, last question. Yeah. And thank you very much for sharing that, by the way. What question are we not asking you?
Can I add another question?
Please. Yeah, answer? Of course. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
Before I get to that one, I do remember something that I used to love when I was in Dallas, and I don't know if it's still there. I think it is. It's a place that was called Newhouse Chocolates. They used to have one in North Park Mall, and they used to have the best chocolate shake I'd ever had in my entire life. And I remember, because I was a theater kid growing up in Dallas, and like after a play or something, when I wanted to celebrate myself, I would go have one of those chocolate shakes. And by the way, they were kind of expensive. Like, when I say kind of expensive, for I was a teenager, so you know, it was probably like $5. But to me, that was a lot of money.
Right.
Like, that's not like you driving through the drive-thru at Whataburger, right? Like, that's like, you know, that was a high-end shake. But I loved that shake so much. I want one right now.
Wendy, thank you. We thank you. I mean, honestly, the answers you have given Restaurant Fiction were pretty incredible. We loved the one where you were talking about Leviticus and how if you put Leviticus in Nashville, it will actually do very, very well. Or if you put the Bluebird in New York City, it would do incredibly gangbusters, just be gangbusters and be as popular, if not more, than the Bluebird in Nashville actually is. We loved how you told us about the fantastic Texas stories that you want to tell and bring out into the world. And of course, even because we are biased of the show Justified that you wrote for, we loved you sharing the fact that you highly enjoy writing villains. I mean, we do too. I mean, yeah. Anyway, I digress. Just thank you all around, and thank you to the watcher, to the listener, wherever you found us. Please like and subscribe to Restaurant Fiction. All right. If you want to watch any of Wendy's work, well, you can just IMDb her. You can go on her website. I mean, she's around the socials. Obviously, I mean, what? There's Nashville, there's Empire, there's Prodigal Son, there's Justified, season 2 in particular. I'm just saying, I mean, it ran for many seasons, but season 2 is actually ultra, ultra rich. It's ultra, ultra strong, but that's just me. Anyway, yeah, she's out there. Her work is out there. Please watch, please support. And as for us with Restaurant Fiction, if you like what you heard, if you like what you saw, we have so many other episodes to learn from, to get that amazing creative motivation, or just to make you hungry. Yeah, that's what we're about too. Anyway, my name is Amanis Rose. Please feel free to reach out, Amanis@restaurantfiction.com. And remember this, nothing makes sense and nothing ever does.